Today is Thursday, March 13th, and this is the World Socialist Website. Mobilize the working class to fight Trump's destruction of the Department of Education by Tom Hall. The World Socialist Website and the Socialist Equality Party urge teachers and workers across the United States to prepare mass actions up to and including coordinated strikes at school districts across the country and in other industries to stop Trump's plans to dismantle the Education Department and all other federal social programs. This must be prepared from below through the formation of rank-and-file strike committees, independent of the sellout union apparatus, which is attempting to limit workers to pointless letter-writing campaigns. On Tuesday, the Department of Education announced it would eliminate nearly half its workforce, laying off nearly 2,000 employees. This is part of Trump's broader effort to illegally dismantle the department, circumventing the federal laws that established it. The immediate consequence of the cuts will be devastating. The employees being eliminated span different roles, with many concentrated in the distribution of federal loans to students and grants to the states. It is only part of a massive assault on education as a whole, including hundreds of billions in cuts to aid low-income families and other support programs as part of the budget currently working its way through Congress. In tandem with the attacks on the ED, the U.S. Department of Agriculture announced it is slashing funding for free school lunch programs for impoverished students. The attack on the ED is part of a broader strategy to privatize education through school vouchers and charter schools. Essential social programs, relied on by tens of millions of people, are being gutted overnight. The House funding bill proposes devastating cuts, including $880 billion from Medicare and Medicaid, $230 billion from food stamps, and other devastating cuts. Billionaire fascist Elon Musk, who heads the Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, is also taking aim at Social Security. With consummate hypocrisy, this crypto swindler and stock market speculator has attacked the program as, quote, the biggest Ponzi scheme in history, unquote. The attack on public education marks the Trump White House as a government of, by, and for the corporate oligarchy. Through savage spending cuts, it is seeking to reduce the government to the bodies of armed men in prisons of all kinds, described by Friedrich Engels as the essence of the capitalist state. Trillions of dollars are being redirected from the working class to prop up Wall Street and prepare for war. This is bound up with Trump's attack on democratic rights, including the arrest and planned deportation of Mahmoud Khalil for participating in an anti-genocide demonstration at Columbia University. Trump is establishing the framework for a dictatorship to crush all resistance from below. Thomas Jefferson described an educated and informed populace as a bulwark against tyranny. This is precisely why the new tyrants are trying to dismantle it. Trump and the oligarchy are determined to tear up 250 years of progress, including the expansion of education after the Civil War to educate freed slaves, and its further expansion as a result of the struggles of the working class. The fight against Trump's bid for dictatorship must be combined with a fight to free the working class from the grip of corrupt union officials and the Democratic Party, who are complicit in Trump's attacks on the working class. The SCP and the WSWS call for rank-and-file committees of educators, students, and working-class parents to organize nationwide action. They must not wait for permission from above, which will never come, to begin such a life-and-death struggle. The Democratic Party's contrived cowardice, including the pitiful display of sign-waving during Trump's joint address to Congress, is designed to distract from the fact that it supports the aims of his domestic policies. Last year, President Biden allowed $190 billion in supplemental COVID-19 funding to lapse, creating massive fiscal cliffs in every major school district, leading directly to school closures. Moreover, the Democrats are continuing to work with the Republicans, including genuine anti-Semites, to crush the campus protests against the Gaza genocide and slander them as anti-Semitic. The erosion of public education in Detroit, Chicago, and other major cities has taken place primarily under the watch of the Democratic Party. At the national level, the attack on public education under Biden was preceded by Obama's Race to the Top program, which involved the elimination of hundreds of thousands of teachers' jobs. The Democrats agree on the need to reduce the federal debt and free up resources for war at the expense of the working class. That is why they suddenly find their voice when it comes to continuing the proxy war in Ukraine. The only major disagreements they have relate to the geopolitical strategy of U.S. imperialism. In a word, over which regions of the world to conquer first. They are prepared to give Trump everything else. The role of the union bureaucracy is marked by the same contrived cowardice. The National Education Association, or NEA, and the American Federation of Teachers, or AFT, have issued hand-wringing statements, yet they merely urge workers to write letters to Congress. What they will not do, and what they act far more decisively and ruthlessly to try to prevent, is a nationwide strike by millions of educators and the more than 14 million union members across the country. The bureaucracy, which long ago abandoned even limited opposition to exploitation, draws six-figure salaries in exchange for enforcing labor peace. To defend their interests, which are totally opposed to the workers they claim to represent, many union bureaucrats are openly embracing Trump and fascism. In a recent editorial on MSNBC's website, AFT President Randy Weingarten postured as an opponent of the Education Department cuts, even as she declared her willingness to work with Education Secretary Linda McMahon, a billionaire who was appointed for the sole purpose of abolishing the department she now leads. Weingarten presented cuts to education as a national security issue, implicitly lining up with Trump's trade wars by arguing that they will weaken America's ability to compete against its adversaries. Weingarten is a highly placed political operative, traveling from Israel to Ukraine in support of U.S. militarism. She worked 15 hours a day, forcing the reopening of schools against overwhelming opposition from teachers and parents during the height of the pandemic. This brought her into contact with open anti-vaxxers now in and around the Trump administration. The working class must intervene. Trump's social counter-revolution and dictatorial measures are provoking and will provoke mass opposition. The conditions exist to unite educators with federal workers, healthcare workers confronting the destruction of public health, manufacturing workers being hit by tariffs and job cuts, students opposing war, and the attack on democratic rights. Major struggles by educators are pending in Chicago, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and other cities as the Democrats implement these cuts on the local level. The development of rank-and-file committees, independent of the trade union apparatus, will unite teachers, students, parents, federal workers, healthcare workers, auto workers, and every other section of the working class in a coordinated struggle against Trump's mass layoffs, the destruction of social programs, and the privatization of public education. Rank-and-file committees will serve as the means by which workers can exchange information, organize across workplaces and regions, and prepare for powerful collective action, including nationwide strikes. These committees must also unite the fight to defend public education with the struggles of immigrant workers facing deportation, industrial workers fighting layoffs in unsafe conditions, and healthcare workers opposing attacks on Medicaid and Medicare. Trump's apparent strength comes from the character of his official opponents. But the working class, the most powerful social force in history, can sweep away this filth once they recognize their strength and know how to use it. This requires that workers understand they are in a fight not just against Trump, but against the entire capitalist profit system which has produced him, and which is incompatible with the most basic interests of the vast majority of the population. Join the upcoming online meeting of the Educators Rank and File Committee on Saturday, March 15th at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. Register at wsws.org. Trump administration pursues deportation of Mahmoud Khalil while admitting he has committed no crime, by Patrick Martin. As a federal judge held the first court hearing today on the arrest and detention of Palestinian activist Mahmoud Khalil, the Trump administration effectively admitted that Khalil had committed no crime and was being targeted for detention and deportation solely because of his expressed opposition to U.S. foreign policy in relation to the Israeli war in Gaza. A statement from Secretary of State Marco Rubio cited his authority under the 1952 Immigration and Nationality Act, also known as the McCarran-Walter Act, a notorious piece of McCarthyite legislation, to order the revocation of a legal U.S. resident's green card if that person's continued presence in the country, quote, would have serious adverse foreign policy consequences for the United States, unquote. Khalil entered the U.S. legally in 2022 on a student visa, taking classes as a graduate student at Columbia University's School of International and Public Affairs. A Palestinian born in a refugee camp in Syria, who now holds Algerian citizenship, Khalil subsequently married a U.S. citizen and received a green card, making him a permanent legal resident. He completed his work on his master's degree in December and expected to graduate in May. At the hearing Wednesday, over 1,000 supporters demonstrated outside the courthouse in support of Khalil. Federal District Judge Jesse Furman offered to allow Khalil's attorneys to argue the merits of their habeas corpus request immediately, but they declined because the immigration authorities have refused to allow them to consult privately with their client. Attorney Ramzi Qasem argued in court that Khalil, quote, was targeted for his advocacy for Palestinian rights, unquote. Removing him to Louisiana and monitoring his phone calls, quote, impedes our ability to defend him. Authorities at the private prison, run by GeoCorp, said that a private phone call to Khalil would not be available until March 20th, nearly 2 weeks after his arrest. Judge Furman ordered that Khalil's attorneys be given private access to him both Wednesday and Thursday, and set Friday for a further hearing on the schedule for dealing with the major constitutional and legal issues posed in the case. The judge previously ordered the government not to deport Khalil pending the resolution of the case before him. Assistant U.S. Attorney Brandon Waterman, representing the Trump administration, conceded that Khalil could not be deported until after the federal case was decided, but he argued for a change of venue to a federal court either in New Jersey, where Khalil was first taken after his arrest, or in Louisiana, where he is now being held, in a transparent effort to separate him from the community in and around Columbia University, where his wife and supporters live. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, indicated it was going ahead with a deportation hearing before an immigration judge, separate from the federal habeas corpus proceeding. The deportation hearing is now set for March 27. At a news conference after the brief court hearing, Qasem declared, quote, "What happened to Mahmoud Khalil is nothing short of extraordinary and shocking and outrageous. He was taken by U.S. government agents in retaliation, essentially, for exercising his First Amendment rights, for speaking up in defense of Palestinians in Gaza and beyond, for being critical of the U.S. government and of the Israeli government," end quote. Khalil's removal to Louisiana was, quote, unquote, further retaliation, the attorney added. Khalil played a prominent role in anti-genocide protests at Columbia last April, but was never arrested or charged with any crime. He served as an interlocutor between the students who set up a tent encampment on the campus and the university authorities. The blatantly political character of his arrest has provoked widespread condemnation from civil liberties and immigrants' rights groups. Bahar Azmi, legal director of the Center for Constitutional Rights, said in a statement, quote, "The arrest, detention, and attempted deportation of a prominent Palestinian human rights activist for his constitutionally protected activity that the administration disagrees with is not only patently unlawful, it is a further dangerous step into modern-day McCarthyist repression. The courts must stop this lawlessness before this chilling form of repression expands further," unquote. The brazen attack on free speech has produced two different reactions within the Democratic Party, or rather, a division of labor among the Democrats as they seek to head off the threat of mass protests developing in the direction of an outright revolt against ICE, the Department of Homeland Security, or DHS, and the Trump administration as a whole. A relative handful of congressional Democrats, including Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut and Representative Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, have issued denunciations of the arrest of Khalil as a threat to the democratic rights of all Americans. Tlaib, the only Palestinian American in Congress, issued a letter of protest calling the arrest a, quote, attempt to criminalize political protest, unquote, and a, quote, direct assault on freedom of speech, unquote. But this was co-signed by only 13 other representatives out of the 215 in the Democratic caucus. The Congressional Democratic leadership, headed by Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, both from New York, issued mealy-mouthed statements that began with denunciations of the campus protests against the Israeli genocide in Gaza and of Khalil's political views. Schumer wrote on social media Tuesday that while he may, quote, abhor many of the opinions and policies that Mahmoud Khalil holds and supports, unquote, his arrest and detention might not be justified. Quote, if the administration cannot prove he has violated any criminal law to justify taking this severe action and is doing it for the opinions he has expressed, then that is wrong, unquote, he wrote. Jeffries suggested that Columbia University, rather than immigration authorities, should carry out the repression of Khalil. Quote, to the extent his actions were inconsistent with Columbia University policy and created an unacceptable hostile academic environment for Jewish students and others, there is a serious university disciplinary process that can handle the matter, he said. Unless the DHS could, quote, produce facts and evidence of criminal activity, the arrest was, quote, wildly inconsistent with the United States Constitution. The frontrunner for the Democratic nomination for mayor of New York City, former Governor Andrew Cuomo, issued a vitriolic denunciation of the campus protests as, quote, anti-Semitism, unquote, adding that, quote, I unequivocally condemn it, unquote. He would only advise that the Trump administration move cautiously, quote, the rule of law matters, and we must never forget that regardless of the political view expressed, however abhorrent, unquote. The viciously right-wing character of the Democratic Party response only underscores that American society has reached a turning point. As the World Socialist website editorial board warned after Khalil's arrest, quote, no one should underestimate the scale of this assault on democratic rights. This is the rule of the oligarchy in action. The greatest mistake would be to place any faith in the Democratic Party or the trade union apparatus. The fight to free Mahmoud Khalil is an inseparable part of the broader struggle against the dictatorship of the financial oligarchy. The working class must intervene with its own independent strength to defend democratic rights and oppose the turn to war and dictatorship. Trump steps up tariff war as U.S. recession threat grows, by Nick Beams. U.S. President Trump has proceeded with the imposition of a 25% tariff on aluminum and steel imports, refusing to grant any carve-outs or exemptions for longtime U.S. allies, including Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, and Australia. The European Union, or EU, has responded with a series of retaliatory measures imposing tariffs on $26 billion worth of goods, including Kentucky bourbon and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. Further tariffs are to be imposed in April. In a further escalation, Trump said yesterday the U.S. would take countermeasures. He told reporters, quote, of course I'm going to respond. The problem is our country didn't respond. Look, the EU was set up to take advantage of the United States, unquote. Following the Oval Office clash with Ukrainian President Zelensky, the tariff war is another blow to the all-but-collapsed post-war transatlantic alliance. The response in Australia is no less significant. While the economic fallout is not so great, Australia is only a minor exporter of steel and aluminum, the political consequences are enormous. The refusal of the U.S. to grant an exemption or even to take a phone call from Prime Minister Albanese is being regarded as an existential blow to the U.S.-Australia alliance that has been foundational to the post-war political order. The tariff measures went ahead, despite lobbying from U.S. businesses concerned they will have a major impact on the economy. The lobby group even included the country's largest aluminum company, Alcoa, which warned that the tariff hikes could threaten tens of thousands of jobs and raise prices for American consumers. In its explanation of the refusal to grant exemptions, the White House pointed to the central issue of China. It said that carve-outs, such as those that had been made in the past, quote, inadvertently created loopholes, unquote, which allowed Chinese-made steel to come into the U.S. via those countries duty-free. The intensity with which Trump is proceeding with his global economic war was illustrated on Tuesday in a social media post issued in response to a threat by Canada, since withdrawn, to impose a surcharge on electricity. Quote, wrote, quote, if other egregious long-term tariffs are not likewise dropped by Canada, I will substantially increase on April 2nd the tariffs on cars coming into the U.S., which will essentially permanently shut down the automobile business in Canada. These cars can easily be made in the USA, unquote. April 2nd is the date on which a range of governmental departments will report on the implementation of the central thrust of his tariff war, the so-called reciprocal tariff program. This goes far beyond the imposition of like tariffs on countries such as India, which have relatively high tariffs on U.S. goods. It will set in motion retaliation via tariffs for the internal policies of individual countries that are deemed to be inimical to U.S. corporations. For Europe, this includes measures such as the value-added tax, or VAT, environmental regulations, and measures to impose taxes and regulations of the social media and high-tech giants. In Australia, even the pharmaceutical benefits scheme, which the U.S. has long opposed, could be a target for reciprocal action. The global Trump tariff war will accelerate the recessionary trends already showing up in the U.S. economy. These were highlighted in the report on job tracking by the firm Challenger Gray & Christmas issued last week, which detailed the largest number of job losses since the financial crisis of 2008-2009. The report said, quote, U.S.-based employers announced over 172,000 job cuts in February, the highest total for the month since 2009, when over 186,000 job cuts were announced. It was the highest monthly total since July 2020, in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic, when over 262,000 job cuts were announced. Perhaps even more significant than the overall numbers is the rate of increase in job cuts. The report said February's total is a 245% increase from the nearly 50,000 cuts announced 1 month prior. It is a 103% increase from the 84,000 cuts announced in the same month last year. Commenting on the numbers, Andrew Challenger, senior vice president of the firm, said, quote, private companies announced plans to shed thousands of jobs last month, particularly in retail and technology, unquote. He continued that with the impact of DOGE actions, quote, as well as canceled government contracts, fear of trade wars and bankruptcies, job cuts soared in February. Retail has been the hardest hit sector, reflecting a downturn in consumer confidence and spending. Total job cuts for the first 2 months of the year were over 45,000, an increase of 572% from the 6,500 job cuts announced for the same period in 2024. Fears of a recession were fueled by an interview given by Trump to Fox News last Sunday, in which he declined to rule out either inflation as a result of his tariff hikes or a recession. Asked to comment on the possibility of a recession, the Atlanta Federal Reserve has warned of a 2.8% contraction in the first quarter. Trump dodged the issue. Quote, I hate to predict things like that. There is a period of transitions because what we're doing is very big. We're bringing wealth back to America. That's a big thing, and there are always periods it takes a little time, unquote. Trump's sudden reluctance to make predictions stands in marked contrast to his snake oil electioneering rhetoric promising a new golden age virtually from day one. Asked to comment on the potential for tariffs to cause inflation, Trump replied, quote, "You could get it. In the meantime, guess what? Interest rates are down," unquote. But contrary to Trump, the fall in interest rates, as reflected in the decline in the yields on 10-year Treasury bonds, is not a sign of economic health, but is the outcome of the pricing in by investors of the likelihood of a recession. At the start of the year, with the U.S. Federal Reserve indicating that it was in no hurry to lower rates, the market consensus was that there would likely be only one interest rate cut this year. The consensus now is that there will be three, totaling 0.75 percentage point by the end of the year, because the Fed will be forced to intervene to try to prevent the economy from falling into recession. At the center of what has been characterized as the exceptional performance of the U.S. economy over the past 3 years compared to other major economies has been the growth of consumption spending. However, this has been a highly skewed picture because analysis of Fed data has shown by spending by the top 10% of income earners, that is, households making $250,000 a year or more, accounts for nearly 50% of all consumption spending, comprising almost one-third of gross domestic product. Now, the worsening conditions for the vast majority of the population are starting to show up in consumption spending data. Nominal personal spending fell 0.2% between December and January, as against an expected rise of 0.1%, the largest fall since the beginning of 2021. Adjusted for inflation, personal consumption was down by 0.5%, with the biggest falls coming in consumer durable goods, particularly cars. The index of customer confidence issued by the Conference Board fell 7 points in February to 98.3, the sharpest fall since August 2021, and well below the prediction of 102.5. Conference Board senior economist Stephanie Guichard said it was the third consecutive monthly decline. Quote, "Views of current labor market conditions weakened. Consumers became pessimistic about future business conditions and less optimistic about future income. Pessimism about future employment prospects worsened and reached a 10-month high," she said. In another indication of growing economic distress, the Financial Times reported that, quote, "serious delinquencies on credit card balances hit a 13-year high at the end of last year, with steep interest rates increasingly squeezing households. Another purported factor in American exceptionalism was the strength of the private sector dynamism as reflected in a strong market. However, in a recent article titled "The U.S. Economy is Headed for Recession," Financial Times columnist Tech Parikh noted that, quote, "government health care and social assistance accounted for 2/3 of new jobs created since the start of 2023 and half of the 151,000 non-farm payrolls added in February. The full effect of the sweeping DOGE cuts has yet to be felt, but according to an estimate by the financial firm Evercore ISI, the cuts could total 500,000 this year, possibly rising to 1.4 million. On top of the decline of the real economy, there is the ever-present fear that the sell-off on Wall Street can precipitate a financial crisis. The S&P 500 index has declined almost 10% from its high recorded on February 19th, and total market capitalization has dropped by $4 trillion since then. The Trump regime is signaling that it is determined to press ahead both with its tariff war against the world, which has thrown business planning into chaos, and the attack on all forms of government spending, which in any way benefit the broad mass of the population. In remarks on the weekend, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent dismissed the idea that Trump would ease some of his savage cuts as a result of an adverse reaction on the market. Quote, "There's going to be a natural adjustment as we move away from public spending to private spending. The market and the economy have just become hooked. We've become addicted to this government spending, and there's going to be a detox period," unquote. These comments make clear that global economic war is inseparably connected to a war against the working class at home. They are two sides of the same coin and can only be fought on the basis of opposition to all forms of nationalism and an independent political struggle for a socialist program.
This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website. The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.